All right. You laughed a little more than the 8:45 service did that whole thing. Just a little uncomfortable. Here's the deal. We're not doing anybody any favors to be helpful, to speak what is real going on, and talking about what you pick up every time, nearly every time you watch something in primetime television. There's nothing that you saw there that is not part of the steady stream of anything you watch in primetime TV. There's nothing that you saw there that is not part of the steady stream of the front page covers of any magazine, virtually any magazine you pick up when you go down Barnes & Noble. What's there is the entire cultural milieu that happens in and through the movies that we all see. So we just need to look every once in a while and say, all right, what's going on here? And what does God think about this? And what should I think about this? God is very, very pro-sex. He's so pro-sex, he talks about it a lot. Maybe not as much as in our culture, because sex is a theme that goes in and through virtually everything. But a heck of a lot of times in the Bible, we talked about it. In the very first book of the Bible, I'll talk about it in a moment. We see how sex operates, and man and women coming together and being one flesh. We see in the Bible people who are staring at their father's nakedness. We see in the Bible God taking a prophet. We'll look at this today. A prophet and having him marry a prostitute. We see in the Bible concubines, a little bit of wife swapping. We see argumentation or the rationalization for how sex operates and when it's awesome and all that. It just goes on and on throughout the entire scriptures. And in our culture, sex is such a big, big thing that we joke about, that's the theme of movies, that is in and through what we live. But what we don't see, what we don't talk about is the story behind the story. Most of what we experience with sex is sound bites. You know, that's my opinion, that's your opinion. We see this, we see that, we hear this. But we don't really talk about what really happens underneath the covers, underneath the story, in the broader context of what it does to a person's heart, what it does to God's heart, what happens when God views sex not as making love, but actual sex is a slight mirror of his love for us. That's what we're going to learn today. And we're going to learn in large part because people in our community are really going to open up and talk about some things that have happened in the midst of their story. These are not going to be short little soundbite stories. So why don't you just go ahead and sit back and comfortable here and let's see the story behind one person's sex story.
So why don't you tell us a little bit about your journey with sex?
I grew up Catholic and went to Catholic grade school, high school, and college. And, you know, I guess kind of was one of those cafeteria Catholics where you pick and choose what you think works for you or doesn't work for you. And I guess I always kind of had the philosophy that, you know, sex with somebody, as long as you were in a long-term loving monogamous relationship, was fine. And, you know, I knew that's not what the church taught, but, I really felt the way the way they taught it was, you know, more from a place of why it was wrong, you know, why it's, you know, they condemned it and it was, you know, you're going to hell and all this stuff. And I thought, well, surely it can't be that bad. Can't say I have, you know, a long history. Kind of felt good about myself that I really just did it within the context of what I thought were loving relationships. It was monogamous. It was, you know, in a weird way, kind of felt good about myself.
So you would say that you were enjoying a really healthy, natural sex life?
I thought, yeah. Mm-hmm. And I got married when I was 23 years old and was married for 8 years and got divorced. And again, kind of went with the same philosophy, and did a lot of dating around. And again, kind of proud of myself because I wasn't sleeping around. I was dating around. And, then after a series of a few relationships, suddenly found myself completely single again. And, I had left the Catholic Church, or I hadn't officially left it, but I just hadn't gone for about 10 years. Somebody invited me to a non-denominational church. I met a number of wonderful people there, and a few of those people talked about how they were waiting for marriage to have sex. And I thought, oh, yeah, well, good for you. And kind of thought, you know, oh, those must be like really holy people if they're taking that attitude, or God's really working in their life. And I don't know what I thought, but I just kind of thought it was interesting, I guess, more than anything. You know, it was over the series of a number of months, and I was really frustrated with God. I was really mad with God, didn't know why I couldn't get a date. And then I realized, you know, slowly I started thinking about my own life and the choices I'd made, and you know, really, for some, he started speaking to me in this area. I don't even know what prompted it, and he had me read the book Every Woman's Battle. And I thought, oh my gosh. There were so many things I learned throughout this many month process, but one of the things I had to own up to, you know, I know one of your questions that you shared with us was, when was sex twisted in your life? And this is kind of my own interpretation of it. When I was married, you know, at some point my husband just kind of decided on his own. And it was less than 2 years into our marriage that he was no longer interested in me sexually or physically. And, you know, that led me to make some pretty poor choices, and I chose to have an affair when I was married. And I don't know that I ever really owned up to what I had done. And I kind of, I think I'd rationalized it or justified it in a way that I didn't even admit to myself, I think, you know, and it even happened over a fairly long period of time. I didn't really admit and own up to what the poor choice that I had made. And so God, through that book and through this time, you know, really chose to address that issue with me. And I, you know, in some weird way, I think I felt like it was okay because, again, I was in a long-term monogamous relationship. I wasn't having sex with my husband. I was only having sex with one person. So somehow that was okay. You know, so I really had to own up to the fact that it was about sex. And I just can't, you know, it was, you will never solve problems in your marriage by looking outside of your marriage. And, it wasn't until I owned up to what I had done and truly admitted to myself that God could finally start the healing process. And so the wonderful thing, you know, his timing is so perfect. And it was during the summer of 2005 that I was going through this process. And I had just started coming to Crossroads, maybe in May. So I started coming to Crossroads on a regular basis, and they started the series on sex. And I loved the approach that they took because it wasn't about condemnation. It wasn't about why premarital sex is wrong. It was all from a place of love and why it is so right to wait. And this was the nail in the coffin that really just, it just changed my life. And I just really feel, that's when I got convicted. I'd been on this solo journey kind of for about a year, year and a half, and God put somebody in my life a little over a year ago, and I was so ready at that time with this new spirit of, you know, God's intention and his design for sex. And, you know, very early in our relationship, I told him where I was coming from. And, you know, not only was he okay with it, he was right on board with it. And I know God blessed me with this relationship because we're waiting. It's funny because a number of my friends will ask me, why aren't you worried about, you know, if you're compatible or, you know, what it's going to be like? And I'm just not. I know if God let me phrase it this way. If I'm honoring God in this way, he will honor me in return. And, you know, the beauty of it is I feel like the relationship has been built on stone and not sand. And so if for some reason there were issues, if we decided to get married and there were some kind of issues with our sex life, I just know that our relationship is so strong we could talk our way through it. So many people think about what they're giving up and they think it's not freedom and there's so many rules. And, you know, it's not about that at all. And I've gained so much in what God's given me by waiting for his timing. I just can't even imagine going back to another way of life or to the old ways.
Hey, let's thank her for her vulnerability. Man. It's just great to be a part of a place where people are talking real and opening up their life, and they stand on a long history of shoulders of just not playing games around here and just giving the real stuff. So for those of you who are part of those stories, just thank you so much for being a huge, huge help for us. What's going on inside of her there? Why the tears? Why the emotional intensity? I mean, it's just sex, right? What's going on deeper underneath there? Why all the stuff? Well, a piece of the story comes from the book of Genesis, the very first book in the Bible, when Adam and Eve, first created people, they have a very first intense, great sex relationship. And here's what happens with these people who are going to be with each other for the rest of their lives. Here's what Adam says. The man said, "This is now bone of my bones and flesh of my flesh. She shall be called woman, for she was taken out of man. For this reason, a man will leave his father and mother and be united to his wife, and they will become one flesh." Man will leave his father and mother and be united to his wife, and they will become one flesh. The man and his wife were both naked, and they felt no shame. They were naked. They were open. They were vulnerable. They were emotionally and physically and spiritually nothing hidden. We are all one. We are all together. And this is seen in the beautiful way in which God gives them a gift of sex. When two people get married, in God's eyes, you're no longer two individuals. You're now one person. You're not two people. You actually come together and you are one. And what sex is when two people come together, they become literally and physically one flesh. If I can get my duct tape open here, there you go. Become one flesh. And sex, what it does is we feel so connected with somebody because we are connected emotionally, we are connected spiritually, and in that act, there is the physical mirroring, the binding together of two people where we become one. We become one physically, and this oneness physically mirrors what's happening in the emotional realm, in the spiritual realm, where we become one with a person. Now, just some things for you to think about how I think our sex is different from any other created being sex. The Bible says that men and women are created in the image of God. We have something in common with God that the rest of the animal kingdom doesn't have. Just think for yourself as you process, you know, animal sex videos. Not that you have ever watched such a thing, but you have if you ever watched Animal Planet, National Geographic. Think about those things you see. You probably can't identify any animals that you've ever seen having sex eyeball to eyeball. Someone said last night, well, dolphins. Well, not really. They're on the sides of their head, you know. What is it about us that we can have sex eye to eye, looking in the deepest places of our hearts? This is a gift. I believe it's a gift because it shows that there's a connection that's deep that goes into the windows of our soul. What is that about us? That's very special. What is it about us that the animals that I know and a dog I had mate a long time ago, and I've had cats when I was a little kid, there doesn't seem to be all that much pleasure in the midst of sex, especially with some beings like the cat, where there's actual ribs on the penis. They're going the opposite direction. They're screeching when the cats are having sex. And then you look at us, and there's this thing called the clitoris, which is purely there for pleasure. It has nothing about reproduction at all. It is purely and exclusively for pleasure. And in the animal kingdom, when is there sex? When it's reproducing time. When it's that time, and then it's what happens. Us, we can have it any day, any day, on and on. On it goes, simply because that's part of how we are created. What is in that with us? See, here's where we start talking about being created in the image of God. We can have sex beyond just reproducing because sex mirrors love. It isn't making love. It mirrors love. And it's mirroring the kind of love that God has for us. I believe the sensations that we have when we have a sexual experience are similar to the sensations that God has for his children. The sensations of love that he has for us. Where does this monogamous thing come from? We all define monogamy differently. But where does that come from? All of us, I'm sure, would say, okay, yeah, I believe monogamy. Even just monogamy like 5 minutes at a time or something like that. Where does this come, this idea of monogamy? Look at the animal kingdom. I haven't seen any sense of monogamy in the animal kingdom. It's like the strongest rules. I was watching a bear video a couple months ago, and you know, the big bear, the strongest bear, gets to have the girl bear, and then whenever there's a bigger bear that's able to knock him off, then that bigger bear is monogamous with that bear. Yet for us, there's this aspiration of, man, we're together, we're close. Why is that? It's because when there's a sexual experience, there's a transaction, there's a connection on a deeper level. I'm trying to get us sensitized to that. The sensitive in our midst understand becoming one, and we know what that's like. And not just the sensitive, but the strong in our midst. Let's take a look at one strong person's story behind their sex story.
Give me your first like thought or memory about sex.
Wow, my first memory about sex. When I was a young kid, I would see, you know, like things on television, and I would be like, wow, you know, that'd be so cool. Like that's my first memory. Like things that were sexy were things that were popular and things that were cool. I was a kid that watched like MTV and stuff like that a lot. And occasionally we'd run across somebody's dad's magazine, and you know, skin was sexy. That's what sexy was. And I really equated that with what sex was. I really didn't know what the act was, but I just knew that these people had a lot of skin showing.
You remember your first Playboy?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm in church talking about Playboys. It's crazy. My first Playboy, my friend's older brother had one in his like bag. And we snuck in and we saw it, and I was like, whoa, that's what it looks like.
What was your very first sexual experience like?
Wow. Dang, that's deep. I was molested when I was a kid. I was very young, and I didn't really know what was going on or what it was all about. I didn't even know it was a sexual thing until something in my heart was like, this is not right.
So how'd that start playing out like later on in life as you started to grow up sexually?
Man, I really told myself like, this will never happen to me again. You know, like somebody did me wrong. They did me dirty. This will never happen to me again. And I dedicated my life to, you know, being the one that was not getting manipulated, being the one not getting molested. Like that was my thing. And I was going to fight against it. You know, I was looking to protect myself. So I did have sexual experiences. I wasn't necessarily having sex. Yeah. To me, like that was too far. And even when I ended up having sex, which was another like not very good experience, but even when I ended up not like having sex, it was too much. Like I felt something that I wasn't ready to feel, and it was so big I couldn't take it. It was more real than anything I've ever experienced in my life.
Tell me more about the first time you actually had sex with the
man. First time, I was like 17 years old, and We were football players at the time, and these older girls in their 20s were at my friend's house, and they really wanted to get involved with us, and we were hanging out with them. There was, you know, I just remember we were making out with these girls, and some things ended up happening, and I really didn't want to be inside this girl. Yeah. And I found myself in a situation where I was, and I got really mad at her, and I was like yelling at her, and like I went away crying, and I freaked out, and she was like, what, you know, it's sex, everybody's doing it, this is what people do. And she didn't know my past, I don't really know her, and she was very aggressive, you know. And it was for me as a man, like I would tell other guys that, and they'd be like, yeah, right, whatever, dude, congratulations, man. She was like 24, congrats. Like it wasn't a congratulations, it was a sickness. It was a disgusting feeling that I had, that I also felt like I wasn't in total control. And I was very angry that some part of me is now gone. And, you know, these older girls were giving alcohol to little boys, and it was just bad. It was bad. Yeah. And, I ended up losing my virginity to somebody that I still to this day don't know what her name is. And to me, it has to stop here. Like, I can't put this on to the next person. I can't be a guy who's at the club preying on girls. I can't be a predator, because, like, I know what it's like to have it done to me, and I don't want to do this to anyone else. When it comes to me and my sexual relationships, I really try to stay pure. Now, I slip up sometimes, don't get me wrong, but
What slip up mean? Tell me what slip up means.
Slip up, like, I find myself in situations where, you know, I've made out with a girl, or I've gotten close to having sex with a girl, and I would freak out, you know? Like, not like, you know, run out of the room screaming, but I would freak out, like, yo, we went too far, I gotta stop talking to you. We're done. We went too far. I'm done. I gotta go. I can't be alone with you. I can't, you know, we can't spend alone time together, because I want to have sex. And I want, when I have sex, like, I want to have a license to do so. And I want to be able to have, like, a Jesus factory, you know, and have lots of sex. Like, I want to hold on to it for someone. I want to save this for them. And it means more to me, because I've been in situations where I wasn't in control. Like, I've been in situations where I was underneath someone else's hand. And now that I know that, like I'm okay, and I'm worthy of having positive touch, like, that's what I want, and that's what I want to give some girl, you know.
In your ideal world, like, what do you imagine sex to be?
Wow, it was funny that I was just talking about this the other day. Like, in an ideal world, like I said, I want to have a Jesus factory. Like, I want me and my girl to experience all kinds of different kinds of crazy sex. But not just having sex. Like, I want her to be inside my mind deeper than I'm inside her. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, and I want God to be in the room with us. Like, I want this to be a complete wholeness type situation where we can have positive lovemaking and not have to worry about having sex, or not have to disrespect someone so we can feel better about ourselves, or not have to put her, lower her down as the beautiful, strong woman that she is, to make her some sort of a toy, really exalt her and be in a position where I'm lifting her up. So sex is a servant, like a situation where I could serve the person that I love, and she could serve me. That's sex.
You might have never thought about sex that way. You might not understand everything that was said there. But I believe for most of us, something just clicks inside of us. Something's like, I don't understand everything there, but there's just something deep about that. There's something right about what Nick is talking about. See, what he's talking about there, I don't know if he knows if this is what he's talking about or not, but what he is talking about is what Adam and Eve experienced of becoming one flesh, one in every single way, shape, and form. And it's also the kind of love that God has for his people, kind of love that God has for you. God defines or describes the love that he has for us, or people who are in the Bible called the church. The kind of love that God gives to the church is the kind of love that a man ought to give to a woman, and vice versa. Here's how the New Testament describes this in the book of Ephesians chapter 5. Here's what it says. It says, in the same way, husbands ought to love their wives as their own bodies. He who loves his wife loves himself. Why? Because they're one. After all, no one ever hated his own body, but he feeds and cares for it, just as Christ does the church, for we are members of his body. For this reason, a man will leave his father and mother and be united to his wife, and the two will become one flesh. This is a profound mystery. This is saying that God has the kind of love and passion for you that in your most sexually intense times comes, your most sexually intense times come close to the kind of love and passion that God has for you. And when two people come together and they become one, there's a connection. Well, it's hard to describe. It's so hard that it just simply says, yeah, it's a mystery. got this duct tape here signifying what sex does to us or for us. You know, if I were to come down in here in the crowd, which I am doing right now, and I just kind of start sticking, you know, my duct tape on people as we come down on down the road. What's happening is, biologically speaking, as I got down the road here, down the row, that person had pieces of everybody in front of them. And this is normally where people go with a sex message in church, is totally to the fear factor. Be afraid because you're having sex with everybody your partner's had sex with. STDs, you're going to get an STD. And actually, there's a lot of truth there. There really is, but I just don't believe that fear factor is the way to talk about sex. I want to talk about it from the love factor standpoint. It's not as profound to me that there's particles on every person as you have sex. What's more profound to me is the mystery of how this duct tape had less and less adhesion properties as it goes on, and the mystery that sex, the more you have it with more people, the less adhesive it becomes. Do you remember the very first time you had sex, how adhering it was to that person? There was something mysterious that happens. And the more you have sex with more people, the less mysterious it becomes, the less sticky sex becomes, the less... It's fun, it feels great, but the less profound the mystery of oneness. I think it's because our heart has to protect itself. Our heart has to figure out that, man, every time this person leaves, there's a detachment, and the heart tries to protect itself by just reducing it to physical pleasure versus spiritual oneness. My very first sexual experience was with Wonder Woman. First time I masturbated, Wonder Woman. And weird, I saw last week, some like cheesy Lifetime movie was on, and Linda Carter was on there. I had a strange connection with her. Now look, hear me very, I don't mind, like, you know, doing funny jokes. That's fine. I'm really not trying to be funny at all. I'm really not. First person you had a sexual experience with, there was something there. If you saw that person today, something would be triggered inside of you that is not triggered with somebody you haven't been with or just recently been with, because the adherence properties of sex aren't as significant. This is some of the story behind the story of sex and love, the power that God gives us with sex. Now, if you've had a lot of sex or a lot of sexual experiences and you start to think about these things, because, you know, Oprah's not telling you about this, MSNBC isn't telling you about this, Dr. Ruth, no one talks about this stuff because, you know, you can't make money off of this stuff. You know, you make money off of selling sex and just saying, hey, whatever you want to do. No one talks about this stuff. But when you start to realize and put this stuff together in your mind, You might start to feel, boy, I'd like to have some more of that adhesion stuff going. Guys, let me just talk with you for a moment. Guys, just guys, okay? I wish I just had you in a room so I could put you something I want, put something in your mind I'd love to have stay in your mind forever. But we're going to do it in mixed company anyway. First of all, God has created you very uniquely. Generally speaking, men are more emotionally resilient than women, generally speaking. And this oftentimes serves us very well. So in the history of the world, most of the wars are fought by men. Emotional resilience helps when you have to go kill somebody, or somebody beside you has to be killed and you got to pick up your gun and go after and kill somebody else. I mean, the emotional toughness of warriors that men have, it really serves us in many, many ways. But in this area of sex, it's where it starts to get distorted and maybe doesn't serve us as well. You might know somebody and you may joke about her and you actually refer to her as psycho chick. She's psycho chick because you adhered to her, and when you pulled away, a piece of her left with you. Something happened inside of her and she's just maybe a little more sensitive to you. The power of sex is it hears, and when it's not used the way God intends, it's some bad stuff. This, you know, here's guy time here for a minute. Dick tape. That's exactly what happens. Now, what happens when there is an adhesion and then we realize it's not as magical any longer? It's not. We got to keep doing more kinky and more intense things to kind of get that magic back. What do you do if you just say, man, I want to get the stickiness back. I want to get the beauty. I want to get the mystery back. Can that happen? One person's story behind the story. He's experienced. Yes, let's look at him.
What was sex like when you were 20?
Sure. I go back to freshman year in college is perhaps the most, some of the darkest parts of sex for me. And, I was caught in a big lie because actually I was pretty popular with girls, and I was terrified of sex. So the way I handled it was I told all the guys that I was having sex with all these girls, in order to bolster my reputation and to get them envious. They saw that I was spending a lot of time with girls. And actually, I think the real reason the girls liked me is because I really didn't push them for sex. I was terrified about sex. And then I did spend time with one girl. She became my girlfriend for a year and a half. We did have sex. And I can tell you, it was all about neediness. She really wasn't willing, but she engaged in it. It was all about me. It was all about lust. It was all about grabbing. And I always felt empty afterwards, and really felt hopelessness as a result of that kind of sexual experience. And it did not help our relationship. But it did help me boast to my friends. I can remember feeling this deep hunger that I needed to have sexual experiences in order to grow or to have any ability of any status as a male. And I can tell you that led me over time not only to boast about sexual experiences which were not true, which always left me feel empty and like I didn't measure up. It led me to try to find sexual experiences in striptease joints. It led me to try to find sexual experiences even if I had to pay for them, which I always did indirectly, like by inviting striptease dancers to my table. It led me into a bunch of absolutely empty sexual experiences in an attempt to fill this hunger the only way I could measure up is through sex.
So what changed to bring you from that place to this place?
Sure. Well, the first thing that happened is I thought marriage would take care of all those issues, and that marriage probably would be the ultimate experience where I'd find one person where I'd find sexual fulfillment. And what I discovered, of course, is that was not true. Even though I was sexually fulfilled with my wife and we were learning how to find each other sexually, I still had developed now this other part of me, which was a deep need for this secret sex. Because now what I really taught myself is I could have these sexual experiences, which were more fantasy than reality, through striptease joints, through these other encounters. And finally, what had to happen is I had to confess those to my wife, and then I had to get into a place of other people helping me learn how to grow up and walk away from those secret sexual fantasy experiences. I was always trying to get my needs met. I was ritualizing sex. It was kind of like touch this, touch that, throw this switch, you get this, and it's done. And the biggest thing that changed all that to me was looking at sex in a sense of gratitude, praying for my wife, and then God would respond by opening me up to my wife's needs. And when I pray for my wife in the midst of sex, I'll be very specific. When I pray for my wife in the midst of sex, it both slows me down, makes me more gentle, and makes me much more responsive to my wife's needs.
So you don't approach sex for your needs, you approach it to meet your wife's?
It's not that simple. I approach sex to meet our needs. The way God has brought me into this is, and I think God is either maniacally manipulative and angry at us, or he really is giving us a loving gift. But as I pray, as I'm in an attitude of thankfulness, and I'm focusing on responding to Marty as a gift, I really believe God shows me what to do at that moment that provides satisfaction for both of us.
Do you feel like you're in a good place sexually right now?
I feel that I have I've lived a life where sex has been a major part of who I am. And I do believe I'm in the best place I have ever been in my sexuality and with sex and with my wife right now. Sex right now is incredibly connective, comforting. It is, in fact, one of the most hopeful things that I do. I can tell you there have been times in our marriage, we've been married 30 years, we have had all sorts of sexual issues, from injury, birth of four kids. We've watched other couples end their sexual relationship because it is a nuisance, it's annoyance, they have no time for it, they're too driven outside of their relationship. My wife and I have come to a place where we realize God really intends us to have great sex. That's part of what He wants for us. And so we often will have these conversations about, hey, our sexual life is beginning to wane, and we love each other too much to give up on this gift of God. And so we will often actually engage in sex because we love each other and we believe through this gift we love each other more. We have probably rekindled our sex life 20 times in the 30 years that we've been married.
Sounds like your story about sex is pretty positive right now.
I'm 55 years old. My wife is 53. I can tell you the best sex is the sex we're going to have. Clearly, in the last, especially the last 8 years, as we have moved sex into the spiritual as well as emotional and physical realm, and as we've seen this as a gift that we want to engage in, our sex continues. It's different, but our sex continues to get better and better and much more fulfilling.
We might not understand everything that's going on there, but this is the beginning of our series. And that might bring up all kinds of questions for us right now. What if I'm not married? What if I've never been married? What if I'm in all likelihood I'm never going to be married? What about this? I mean, all those are good questions that we'll touch on and deal with in the midst of this series. But for now, the starting point is to understand this sex mirrors the kind of love that God has for us. Book of Hosea. Hosea is a prophet in the Old Testament, and the nation of Israel is prostituting themselves. God's people are prostituting themselves and going after everything except God. They're loving everything else more than God. They're loving money more than God. They're loving sex more than God. They're loving different kinds of gods more than God. And God is feeling like a violated lover. So he says to Hosea, Hosea, go get the prostitute Gomer. I want you to marry her. She probably wasn't a very successful prostitute with a name like Gomer. But she goes and he has to go and marry Gomer. And Hosea lives out this life married to a prostitute just so everybody can see that this is how God feels. God feels like he's connected with somebody who is sleeping around, cheating around on him. And God responds throughout the book of Hosea the way that a lot of people I know who have been cheated on in a dating relationship or cheated on in the midst of a marriage respond. There's this anger. It's like, I hate how to kill. I'm going to wipe you out. This God's doing this whole thing. And all of a sudden, oh, but I love you. I do. I need to be around you. I love you. I need, oh, no, but I can't. Oh, half. I'm going to take half of you. I'm going to divorce you. But we've had such good times together. How can I give it? And he goes this rubber band back and forth. God responds the way jilted lovers today respond. Why? Because God is the greatest lover there is. He just is flat out in love with you. He is. In the book of Hosea chapter 11, he has this monologue where he's speaking with Israel. And I've changed the words from Israel to you because that's the intent. And this is what God would say to you. He says this, you know, when you were a child, I loved you. I taught you how to walk, taking you by your arms, but you did not know that I healed you. I drew you with gentle cords, with bands of love. And I was to you as those who take the yoke from your neck. I was the one who set you free from certain things. I stooped and I fed you. How can I give you up? You know what God says? God says, I can't quit you. How can I hand you over? My heart churns within me. My sympathy is stirred. No matter where you are, no matter what you've done, no matter what has happened in your sex life, no matter what's on the covers, under the covers, that other people don't know, God says, man, I churn for you. I have the deepest sympathy and conviction for you. I can't get over you. Even though we've done things, experienced things that's had the effect of our heart, where our heart's just been ripped. And there's this internal brokenness that you maybe never even were able to identify till now. And now you're just like, you're right here. And you just say, now what? God loves you, that's what. God loves you. What you feel in the most intense moments of sex, God intensely feels for you all the time. We're creating the image of God, and that is the kind of intensity God feels for you. God can't get over you. God internally churns for you. God is a fan of you. God meets you where you are and comes right in the middle of the situation and can heal things that you think can't be healed, and can also cause a stickiness, a new stickiness, a new layer of stickiness that comes that you've lost a long time ago. Every time we're in the series, there's going to be what God only does. God's going to prick you. He's going to tug at you. He's going to poke you. There's going to be a ooh, ooh, ow. And at the same time, there's also going to be a salve. There's going to be a bands of love. There's going to be a mending. Every time there's going to be a piercing and there's going to be a mending. No matter how uncomfortable you might have been today, I want to ask you for your own benefit. Come back next week, every week. I don't believe there's anything more important you can do at 10:15 than be here, where you're going to be able to receive things and understand things that you're just not going to hear anywhere else, but which goes to the core of who God is. Why don't you stand with me right now? God, as we stand, we're standing right now, and we're hoping to see some adhesion and some healing and some connection. That's what I'm asking for. That's what many of us are asking for.